space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, woohoo! It's the Mad Science Show. To put power in the hands of the people, you first got to put some information out there so that they can understand why it's so important to understand what energy really is and what energy can really do. So with that said, I've handpicked a few videos here. My friend Thomas was putting out a video. He showed me a video about cold plasma. And so with that said, I started reading into some of that, and of course I've seen some of these things before, going all the way back to the Rife machine and different radio frequencies and stuff like that, different types of experiments. But nonetheless, I've picked out a few videos to go along with that particular video, which I'm going to play the podcast to, because it's really important if you want to learn about energy is to really listen to the details of what they're going on, what they're talking about, but not just that, listening past, to think past of what I like to call it outside the box thinking. Think past what they're saying that this is capable of, and then see how far you can actually take that idea. Many years ago, somebody figured out, they tried to lift up a rock, and this rock was entirely too heavy. They couldn't lift that rock up by themselves physically, and even with several men, basically surrounding this thing, it still was quite the struggle in order to be able to do that. But somebody got an idea in their head that if you took a lever, big old long pole or something like that, and you put it on the fulcrum point, and you could actually put one end underneath that rock and have a big old long end sticking off of the other, that one guy himself could actually go over there and pull down on that, and the physics would allow him to be able to lift that rock. So, it's a mechanical understanding of something that, is going on there that you're trying to resolve. And the same thing applies with understanding what energy is, and even to the extent of understanding the terminology that science likes to use for certain things. See, science has made a lot of large claims, that all these things that they can do and all that kind of stuff. But to put the power in the hands of the people, first you got to give them some sort of understanding of the knowledge that and the power within that knowledge in order to be able to do things that, most generally a lot of folks wouldn't want you to know that you could actually do. This particular thing that we're going to talk about here today, cold plasma, has a lot of applications in a lot of different directions. And so I picked out a few different pods that I want to try to play a little bit, and might comment here and there in there. But anyway, I hope that by the time you end up hearing this show today, that you have a different understanding about energy. See, in the modern day age, we've got electricity, we've got AC current, we got DC current, and we've got different high voltages and methods of producing high voltage. We got methods of doing wireless energy transfer, all stemming back from way back in the 1800s, and different types of energies that can be generated from static electricity and so on down the line. The Hawksbee device, the Lord Kelvin device, the Van de Graaff generator, the Wimshurst generator, and many more along that line. But it's all about moving energy, and whenever this show, I hope that I can successfully explain why it is that I say a lot of the things that I do about energy. And to try to let everybody know, energy is free. You just got to understand what it is, how to use it. It's just like any other tool. If you use it properly, you can do some pretty amazing things. If you use it improperly, such as in war machines, you can do some pretty rotten things. Once you understand the physics of what's actually going on, whether you subscribe to the electron theory or not, it still gives you a general understanding of what's happening here. It makes it a little bit easier to explain. Sometimes the terminology that I use, there's people out there that are pretty highly educated that just don't really like to hear me talk, because I don't use the school book terminology all the time. And I actually like to try to go into the simplicity of it, the simple of it. What's actually going on? Instead of explaining current as a bunch of electrons flowing and how much of the electrons are flowing or whatever, I like to explain it how it's simple understanding would allow everyone, regardless of what their educational background is, to understand what's going on. It's like when you turn the water hose on, you know? Just a water hose by itself with no kind of nozzle or anything. All that water flowing there is doing exactly what electricity does. It's current. It's that volume of water that fills up the garden hose and goes down there. Well, when you want to talk about voltage, well, then you do something different to that water. Instead of just allowing the water to flow freely, you kind of restrict it a little bit and pressurize that water and cause that water to water pressure to build up. And now you're showing what voltage actually is. Voltage is pressure. Voltage is what gets work done. And you obviously need to have a certain amount of pressure and voltage and current and everything in order to get something to run. But the fact is, if you know how to move this energy or this water from one place to the next, you can move it rapidly without meeting the resistance that you would have otherwise met, and making your generators or your pumps have to work harder. So, with that said, this cold plasma technology out there, I'm going to let a few of these podcasts explain to it. But first, I'm going to play just a little short podcast of what is plasma. So, listen to this real quick.
You may have learned about the three states of matter, solid, liquid, and a gas in a previous lesson. Did you know that there is a fourth state of matter, plasma? In this lesson, we will learn about plasma. Let's start by thinking about ice. When ice is sufficiently heated, it melts to form water. It has therefore undergone a change of state, from a solid to a liquid. Recall that in a solid, all of the particles are closely packed in a fixed position, and therefore has a fixed shape and volume. The particles in a liquid are still touching one another and are able to move around each other. Therefore, a liquid still has a fixed volume, but it takes the shape of their container. What is the change of state that occurs when water is heated to 100 degrees Celsius? Pause, think, and continue when ready. The answer is, water evaporates from a liquid to a gas. In our case, water vapor. The particles in a gas are further away from one another and take the shape and volume of their container. For certain substances, if we continue to apply heat to their gaseous form, another change of state could occur. These substances can go from a gas to a state of matter called plasma. For this change of state to occur, very strong heat must be applied. When heat is sufficiently strong, the electrons are stripped from their respective atoms, creating free electrons and positive ions. Although there are both negative and positive particles, plasma is neutral overall, as there are equal amounts of oppositely charged particles. Since free electrons are present, substances in plasma form can conduct electricity. This is what separates a gas from plasma. All gases cannot conduct electricity, but plasma can. Naturally occurring plasma include lightning and the northern lights. If we were to go far beyond planet Earth, stars also exist in plasma form. In fact, stars are really just hot balls of plasma. Plasma can be found in fluorescent light bulbs and neon signs. When an electrical current is passed through the mercury vapor in fluorescent light bulbs, it heats up the gases sufficiently to strip the electrons and to create plasma. Plasma screen TVs are made possible due to this state of matter. A plasma screen is made of many thousands of tiny dots called pixels, which are made of three fluorescent light electrodes emitting the colors red, green, and blue. The combination of these colors can give any possible color, which is why we can see all colors on these screens. The higher the number of pixels, the higher the definition, and the images will appear sharper and more detailed.
All right, so that one there bails out right there at that spot right there. So we're going to move right on to this next one. And this is one I would say, listen really closely to a lot of things that this lady talks about.
So, hello today. Thank you very much for inviting me here to this really impressive conference. I will talk today about cold atmospheric plasmas from space research to Earth medicine. But start, where can we find a plasma? 99% of the known matter in the universe is a plasma. For example, our sun is a very wonderful and hot plasma. But we also have plasmas on Earth. So here you can see the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis, or if lightning occurs on Earth, it ionizes the surrounding air and produces a plasma. So what exactly is a plasma? You all know the different states of matter, starting from solid. If you put energy into that system, you get a liquid. If you increase the temperature further, you get a molecular and then an atomic gas. And if you put energy into that system, the atoms are separated into electrons and ions, and you produce a plasma. So a plasma is the fourth state of matter. It's a partially or even fully ionized gas, and it's usually very hot. But how does this fit together that I actually told you in the beginning? I will talk today about cold plasmas. So this is the clue what we are doing in our company. So we're producing cold plasmas, meaning that we developed technologies to bring hot plasmas down to very low temperatures, temperatures at room temperature. I will also talk about cold atmospheric plasmas today. This means that the plasmas are not only cold, so have room temperature, but can also be produced at atmospheric pressure, so have applications on Earth. Why were we interested in cold plasmas? So in the beginning, we really only wanted to do fundamental research. Plasmas are regarded as the most disordered state of matter, and you all know that crystals are regarded as the most ordered state of matter. So if you combine these two and produce plasma crystals, this therefore should not exist and should not work. But there was a theory from Professor Morfell from the Max Planck Institute who said under certain circumstances you can produce plasma crystals. And this is what we wanted to find out during our research. So what did we do? We produced a cold plasma. We introduced small microparticles into this plasma. And we wanted to find out if these small microparticles form a crystalline structure within the plasma, so form a plasma crystal, which would then give us a new state of matter. It was important that the plasma is cold, because otherwise the small microparticles would just melt, and we faced another big problem. What happens on Earth? You put the microparticles into the plasma, and they just settle down due to gravity. So we had to get rid of the gravity. So we started with parabolic flights and later on applied for experiments on the International Space Station. And I'm happy to tell you that we were successful. We now have experiments up there since 18 years. Here you can see the cosmonaut Sergei Krikalev. He's holding our first plasma crystal chamber. And you can see he's holding it with one finger, although this weighs approximately 50 kilograms. So the problem with gravity was solved, and I will show you on the next slide a small movie that we were able to produce plasma crystals, so a new state of matter on the ISS. And this is what you can see here. So the different colors represent the microparticles in the plasma, and you can see they form a crystalline structure within the most disordered state of matter. But where are the applications? Why were we interested in doing this? As I said, really fundamental, basic physics. We wanted to understand the dynamics of matter. Up to now, plasma crystals do not have any application on Earth, but, and this is the nice thing, the side product of cold plasma, which we just developed to not melt the microparticles, this has lots of applications on Earth, and this brings me to the next slide, which is presumably the most important slide of my talk. So why are cold plasmas of interest on Earth? We found out that cold plasmas can be designed in such a way that they destroy and inactivate bacteria. This means all different kinds of bacteria, independent of the resistance level against antibiotics or antiseptics. These means multi-drug-resistant bacteria such as MRSA, Clostridium difficile, vancomycin-resistant enterococcus, the big threats of mankind currently, which we will face even more in the future. Cold atmospheric plasma also inactivate viruses, fungi, spores, mites, and even molecules, meaning odor molecules, but also volatile organic compounds. This means also small molecules such as ammonia, carbon monoxide, or even nitrogen dioxide. Cold plasmas can do this on surfaces if they are designed properly, so molecules or microorganisms which are attached to surfaces. This means human skin, human mucosa, but also hard or soft surfaces. It can do this in fluids, and it can also do this in air without leaving any negative residues. On the next slide here, I show you different kinds of cold plasma technologies. You can see that they all have in common that they have a purple light. Yeah? So this is the light which is emitted from the plasma, but otherwise they all look very different. And this is exactly the core competence of TerraPlasma, to develop different cold plasma technologies for different application areas. So here we have plasma devices which can remove molecules from air, but we also have plasma devices on this page which inactivate bacteria in wounds, for example. So completely different applications. How do we do this? So in principle, we can design the plasma. What you can see on this page here is, or are the ingredients of a cold plasma. We have ions and electrons, of course. These ions and electrons interact with the surrounding air and produce more than 600 chemical reactions. So we have reactive species, we have UV light, we have visible light, we have electromagnetic fields, and we have a little bit of heat. And all these ingredients can be changed and can be designed to different applications. Currently, TerraPlasma is working in the areas of medical technology. Here we're focusing on the treatment of chronic infected wounds and also on sterilization of medical equipment. We're also active in the area of hygiene, so removing mites or allergens from surfaces, allergens in the air. We're active in the area of water treatment, so here mainly drinking water production. In the area of odor management, so reducing odors in air, but also odors in textiles. And finally, we also started a new subsidiary company on the field emission control, so developing a device for reduction of carbon monoxide and nitrogen dioxide from the exhaust of cars. As I said in the beginning, today in my talk, I will not focus on all these different application areas. I will go into detail into the medical technology area, so here the chronic wound treatment. Coming to the problem, 5.7 million people in the USA suffer from chronic infected wounds, leading to annual costs of $20 billion. More shockingly, I think, is the next number. Globally, we have one amputation every 30 seconds due to a non-healing diabetic ulcer. It is well known that pathogenic microorganisms, such as bacteria in wounds, lead to inflammatory response, a delay in the synthesis of collagen, and retarded epithelialization, so impaired wound healing. And we believe at TerraPlasma that we can do something against this and that we can help human mankind with this problem. So what did we do? Together with the Max Planck Institute and the company ATEC, we developed a cold atmospheric plasma device for the treatment of chronic wounds and different skin diseases. Its first name was the Microplast, and now it's called SteriPlus. And you can see the device up here on the left side. So it's quite big. In the middle, in the body of the device, is the plasma technology. Up on the top, you see a movable arm, and attached to the movable arm is the so-called plasma torch, which includes 6 electrodes for plasma production. And treatment, in principle, looks like this, that the movable arm is placed above the chronic infected wounds. You can see the purple glow of the plasma. So the plasma is transported to the chronic wound just by a gas flow. TerraPlasma has licensed this plasma technology to the company ATEC, who is now manufacturing and selling this device. And with this device, we also did the largest clinical study worldwide using cold plasma on chronic wounds. And I want to just show you some results of this clinical study. In total, we treated 379 patients within 8 years. Within these 8 years, we did not observe any negative side effects, no allergic reactions, and as the plasma just is transported to the patient via a gas flow, the treatment was painless and well tolerated by the patients. But the most important thing, we had a highly significant bacterial reduction in the plasma-treated wounds in comparison with the untreated wounds. And this bacterial reduction was independent of the resistance level, so we just killed all the bacteria in there independent of their resistance, so including multi-resistant bacteria such as MRSA. We furthermore were able to show improved wound healing. So we believe that with this device, a lot of people can be helped, especially when antibiotics or anything like this doesn't help anymore. Get a few more devices into the market and to address also medical practices, nursing homes, and also mobile nurses, we tried to develop a miniaturized plasma device based on a different plasma technology, as the other device, which I showed in the beginning, is still quite big. We did that in the past 2 years and developed the so-called Plasma Care within our subsidiary TerraPlasma Medical. You can see the device here, and I also brought it with me if you're interested to look at it and to feel cold plasma later on. It's battery operated, it's mobile, it's handy. You can use it with one hand. It doesn't have any wires, no cables, no hoses. And the treatment, again, is fast, similar to the SteriPlus, only between 1 and 3 minutes. In contrast to the SteriPlus, here we slightly touch the wound. That's why we need sterile single-use spaces to do not get any cross-contamination from patient to patient. We're currently undergoing CE... I
want to pause that just for a second. There was a time when similar technology was out there, and you can look it up, that they called quackery devices, quackery science. And so if you want to go back and look into that, it's pretty simple. All you got to do is look up quackery devices and quackery science or whatever. Also go look into Dr. Royal Raymond Rife, and you'd be surprised at they're nearly identical to what they've explained in this particular process. So maybe the devices look a little bit different, but same technology. So it's technology that's been around for a while. As well as, if you understand what you've listened to right here, there's multiple different uses for it. And they haven't mentioned it in this particular podcast. I don't remember if they did in another one. But quite literally, if you understand this particular technology, you can develop superconductors, you know, on a microscopic scale. Now, you're talking about technology that, if used properly, could revolutionize the way that we actually use energy, which is one of the things that I've been trying to point out for some time about plasma technology and what it's actually capable of as far as super efficiency and then some. So I want to throw those quick little deals in there to give you something else to think about, like, not like your brain ain't spinning already, but I'll let this lady finish out what she was talking about.
Certification with this device. So this device was tested preclinically, and here I want to show some of the really impressive results which we achieved. So we did efficacy tests and we did safety tests with this device, and the efficacy test showed that we were able to get a 99.999% reduction of all different kinds of bacteria within 1 minute. This again included, of course, multi-resistant bacteria. The same reduction was achieved for different kind of fungi within 1 minute treatment time. And we were also able to get a 99.9% reduction, so 3 log, of a bacterial biofilm within 1 minute. So these are really normally very difficult to inactivate. Concerning safety, it was shown that the device is safe. There was no induction of mutagenicity due to the plasma. The plasma doesn't have any genotoxic potential. No induction of apoptosis, cell death, was observed. So we were able to find a therapeutic window where we can very efficiently inactivate bacteria, fungi, bacterial biofilm without harming our own human cells. As soon as we get CE certification, so waiting for this until the end of the month, we will start the post-market surveillance study in April. So this brings me to the end of my talk and to the end of the medical application. Nevertheless, I want to draw your attention back to all the different possible application areas of cold plasma. And this is actually also our vision, to bring the knowledge of cold atmospheric plasmas to medical technology, to hygiene, to water treatment, odor management, and emission control, where microorganisms or odor molecules make problems. I believe that we can help. Thank you for your attention.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that podcast, but what I hope the most is that you listened intently to every word that was said and thought past what the actual applications that she just got through mentioning, because there are unlimited applications when you're talking about energy usage. And so, you know, with that said, I got a couple more podcasts that I want to play I think are going to give you a general idea of a whole lot more going on. Folks, science makes a lot of claims, all right? And a lot of these industries out there, things that we've been talking about on Mad Science for a long time, a lot of these industries out there are bringing you pretty much older technology with a newer spin to it, so to speak. So, you know, listening to some of this stuff here.
Plastics, in its varied forms and structures, have deeply penetrated our daily life. No wonder entire Indian landscape is struggling with menace of plastic wastes. Plastics do not degrade and decompose naturally if set under earth, could remain same in the soil for up to 300 years. Plastic wastes are posing many hazards to human life, flora and fauna, including other natural resources. Disposal of plastic wastes in environmentally benign fashion is a formidable challenge world over. Hence, Petroleum Conservation Research Association, in collaboration with CSIR CMERI, developed an innovative technology for environmentally safe disposal of plastic waste along with energy recovery. The technology, plasma pyrolysis, transforms high calorific thermoplastic wastes into a valuable synthetic gas, which can be applied well to gas turbines for power generation. It can also be used as a synthesis gas for hydrogen production. In the first step, the plastic waste is fed in the hopper 1 to provide an intermittent supply to the column of shredder. Shredder reduces plastic waste into smaller bits of suitable size, which are fed to hopper 2. The second hopper, connected to the gasifier, supplies feed intermittently to the gasifier, but the feed rate can be suitably adjusted by means of a control knob. Pyrolysis or reactor is the heart of system, consisting a cylindrical chamber with a tapering bottom half. A transformer supplies necessary voltage to the graphite and carbon electrodes fixed inside the gasifier. As a result, a very high temperature, over 3000 degrees Celsius, is generated at the sparking zone. A slag removal system at the bottom of gasifier drains slag continuously in a water pot. High temperature in the gasifier generates syngas, which is passed through water scrubber for cleaning and quenching the hot gas. The conduit carrying the gas enters the scrubbing tower at the middle and water is sprayed from the top. The flow of gas is maintained by an ID fan, which continuously sucks the gas. Cooled gas enters in a cyclone separator, which removes particulate impurities from the syngas through vortex separation. Rotational effects and gravity are used for separating impurities. The cleaned and cooled combustible gas is passed through a booster for generating requisite pressure in the supply system. Now, the syngas is ready for supply to gas generators for power production. The syngas can also be used directly for various thermal applications in industrial units. Pyrolysis process can also run on the power generated by syngas. The prototype has demonstrated the efficacy of technology for plastic waste disposal with energy recovery. The technology is poised to become a significant game changer in the field of energy economy.
What you just got through hearing right there is an explanation of how to quite literally turn trash into heat and electricity all at the same exact time while getting rid of waste products, which aka would be the plastic that ends up floating around in the ocean out there. So even that, even the trash that's out there floating around could be recovered, just like I was saying prior, that it is a valuable resource that is right now hindering nature because of, you know, what it is floating around out there. Fish get tangled up in, you know, old plastic lines and stuff like that, and you know, it ends up, some of it breaks down, some of it gets ate by fish or animals or whatever. You know, nonetheless, you just took what was a huge problem and turned it and solved two problems in one shot. Well, in all reality, three problems, because now you turned it into a fuel source, which then in turn used to turn a generator that produced electricity, and at the same time, the what would have normally been wasted heat is now is available for a lot of thermal applications, such as heating your house. You could quite literally turn your trash in your house into a fuel source to produce electricity and have a clean burn on the outside using plasma technology that would then in turn make your own house self-sufficient, super efficient, even if to the extent you ran out of trash to burn. Maybe your neighbor's got some extra trash, or you can go down the street and pick up some trash, and you got more trash. You got more energy. So what you've been hearing here, not only cold plasma, but regular hot plasma applications, it solved a multitude of different problems. And this doesn't even scratch the surface. This doesn't even scratch the surface, because if you can use cold plasma technology to produce superconductors that then in turn can transmit electricity from point A to point B without all the resistance, and that means the generator that you're producing the electricity from the trash, then in turn can be running ridiculously efficient, which means that you have even more surplus of energy. So for those folks out there who really thought outside the box when the first lady was talking, thinking about when she said something to the effect about 99% of all matter out into space and around us is plasma. It's in a chaotic state. It's electrons and the atoms and everything all separated out there. It's just kind of floating around out there, and it's in a neutral state. Well, in that neutral state, you put anything in there that is going to throw an off balance in there, and then you get an energetic reaction to it. So there's a lot of yet even more applications if you understand the physics of what's going on in plasma. You're talking about quite literally space age science. That if you, as the people, the average Joe and average Jane out there are listening in, and you realize that you are sitting there with the possibility of some extreme knowledge being placed into the palm of your hands, then you could decide where you want to go with that. Which means you put that knowledge in each other's minds that these things are possible. And then we can take all this of what we've learned and put these pieces of the puzzle together and basically build a structure to where energy quite literally is free, and there is no reason for anyone to fight over resources such as what they like to call fossil fuel, crude oil, gasoline, petrol, all the different names in the energy industry, not to mention the fact that there would be absolutely no reason for a nuclear reactor and ever again, because of the way that nuclear reactors are designed and the function that they do and what it takes to actually build the radioactive rods that they use in the process to boil the water to produce the steam. When you could take this trash using plasma technology and break it down into a different state of matter and different, produce different results, such as gas for running a generator head, or the generator motors, which will turn the generator head, plus the thermal reaction that's going to come from the heated gas coming out the other side of the deal, that could be used in multitudes of applications, anything from heating to cooling, HVAC. If you understand the physics of the thermodynamics that are actually occurring there, and you look into heating and cooling, you'll see you'll see things that match. All right, and when it comes to energy generation and efficiency and clean renewable alternative energy sources, you got everything you need. All the science and all the physics is set down there right in front of you to literally have perfectly engineered, super efficient machinery that deliver what we know as electricity in such an incredible efficient manner that it's ridiculous. And that doesn't even count the possibilities of what the lady's talking about in the health industry, cleaning up water, Everything from, getting bacteria, different dangers of bacteria out of food products and things like that. So you could use this technology, and it's so ridiculously simple once you understand how it's actually functioning. Tesla was a brilliant man. He didn't just give us wireless energy. He gave us a lot of technology. Tesla was so far before his time that the information that he put out there on the table, they helped out guys like Dr. Royal Raymond Rife to figure out a few things, and all these different alternative energy researchers, and even Stan Myers, when you talk about hydrogen technology, of how you can take this energy, you could speed it up, slow it down, you can use this to separate molecules, you can use it to destroy bacteria, you can use it to literally do a lot of things. Let's see, Steven said, did I also hear on that video that it also runs the gas it produces, so it would only take the energy required to generate the tank of gas? Yeah, they did, and that's exactly what they said in there. That prototype can actually use the gas that it produces to run the system. So you're talking about renewable. It's renewable energy that you took trash, you put it into this thing, it broke it down, it was running the machinery that it was using to build the doggone thing to begin with, and then using plasma technology to break that down into another two separate energy sources, one being heat and the other one being electricity from the gas that was used. And that gas has multiple applications as well. Whatever you're not able to use directly, you can store and be able to reuse it later on down the line. So there are unlimited, depending on your imagination, of where you could take that technology. So let's move right along here. I'm going to play this other one here, and once again, I urge you to listen in to everything that's said, and don't just listen, but think past of what this person's talking about. Think past it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A&E Food Testing Show. Today's topic, cold plasma as a foodborne pathogen kill step. Today's guest, Kevin M. Keener, Professor of Food Science at Purdue University, Department of Food Science. He received his bachelor's and master's degree from Ohio State University and his PhD degree in food process engineering from Purdue University. His research has been primarily in the area of non-invasive quality measurement techniques and novel food processing technologies. His specific research projects include NMR, MRI methods for food processing, food applications for radiant frying technology, food applications for non-thermal plasma technology, and characterization of antimicrobial activity in shell eggs with carbon dioxide treatment. He's had numerous awards and honors, numerous patents, a large number of publications. Welcome now, Dr. Kevin Keener, Professor, Food Science, Purdue University. Dr. Keener?
Thank you, Andy. Good morning.
Thank you for joining us today. We're very excited about today's discussion. Can we begin with a very general question? What are foodborne pathogens?
Sure. Foodborne pathogens could be bacteria, could be viruses, principally things that you would hear about would be bacteria, for example, that would make you sick. Everybody hears of the E. coli. There are certain kinds of E. coli, a bacteria type. 0157H7 is one that's there. Also, Salmonella is another group of bacteria. There's over 2,300 different kinds of Salmonella, and all of those are potential pathogens. Pathogens are particular bacteria or viruses that make us sick. And so foodborne means that they're transmitted through food, carried on food, and and that's how we end up getting sick much of the time. What is the traditional method to kill blue-borne pathogens? Well, the most common method is heat. All bacteria, there's a certain temperature point at which they can no longer exist. And so principally how we control these is that foods have low levels of contamination naturally through our production processes, handling processes. And so one of the most common is to be able to cook something. So if you think of taking the chicken and cooking the chicken or your hamburger, similarly, even for things like baking of breads and things like that, the raw ingredients at times, flours and such, have been documented to have things like pathogens in there. And so heating things up is the traditional method for killing. In more recent years, there's been a significant investigation into other alternatives. And folks may be familiar with, like, irradiation. Irradiation is where you apply a high-energy wave, so very little total power delivered, but it's able to break bonds. And so irradiation, think of X-rays. In essence, if you took a food and you put X-rays on it and you X-rayed it a significant number of times, literally thousands to hundreds of thousands, that amount of energy would not heat the food, but it would produce a situation where the bacteria would be unable to replicate due to a break in the DNA. In bacteria, they replicate in a process where they divide, and so it would prevent them from dividing.
Excellent. I understand you have developed in your research a particular skill set in cold plasma technology. Can you describe that to our listeners, which are primarily food production, food safety, food quality, and food security managers?
Sure. The plasma or cold plasma technology is kind of a novel area, and plasma itself is historical in that it's always around us. The physics definition of plasma refers to it as the fourth state of matter. And what it's, or how it's defined is, it's defined as an ionized gas. And so the sun, for instance, would be considered a thermal plasma, or high-temperature plasma. And a high-temperature plasma is one where you have free electrons in concert with gas molecules of similar temperatures. And so free electrons have temperatures in the range of thousands, tens of thousands of degrees. So the sun would be a thermal plasma. Cold plasmas are those where the electron is still at those range of 10,000 of degrees, but the rest of the gas would remain in a low temperature or non-equilibrium, so like room temperature, for example. In our process here for cold plasma, what we're doing is we're actually able to create this ionized gas, and in doing so, we can do that without significantly increasing the temperature of the gas itself. So we take the gas molecules, things like oxygen or nitrogen or carbon dioxide, and we literally can break those down into single elemental ions and charged molecules. And so if the temperature of that bulk gas isn't changing significantly compared to that electron when you generate the free electrons, that's referred to as a cold plasma. And so the other point to plasmas that we're working with are atmospheric, because pressure is also an important factor. And the way we're doing that is under atmospheric conditions. There's a lot of cold plasma technology that's used under vacuum conditions. That's how they make the plasma TVs, and they make a lot of the electrical circuit boards. Is under vacuum, it's able to control, and they can alter surface properties.
I want to pause that just for a second to put another bug in your head to think about. You're always hearing about biological attacks. About people trying to make all kinds of different biological weapons that could potentially cause an outbreak or whatever. But if you're listening closely to not just what this man said is saying here, but what the lady said prior, and understanding a little bit about this technology, there are methods by which you can make portable devices that would quite literally put a shield around you to be a personal protection device against a biological attack. So these bacteria that would be airborne pathogens or whatever could be killed before they could ever even get on your body or before they could ever even enter your body. So you're talking about some really seriously Star Trek style space age technology being unfolded right before your very eyes. If you understand this technology, if you understand what they're talking about here, the applications for not just cold plasma, but regular, you know, hot plasma, whatever, that the implications are unlimited as far as everything from health to energy and so on. And a lot of this isn't new technology. It's been around for a long time. It just hasn't been put into, the pieces of the puzzle haven't been put in to the right order, or even to the extent that mainstream science hasn't really, you know, wanted to explain to you the applications of what we're talking about here. There's so much to energy, everything. I'm going to keep playing this podcast, but like I said, I want to put that bug in your ear so that you could think about potential applications of a plasma that wouldn't burn your skin, but you could actually keep you could breathe right through this type of energy, but the bacteria couldn't make it into your lungs. Think about that.
Things like the underlayment for the circuit board that allows then the metal film to be laid down very precisely. And so the cold plasma technology that we have, or what we're working on, is we're able to take a gas, ionize a gas, break it into these ions and reactive molecules, many of which have bactericidal properties.
So this cold plasma gas kills the pathogens of interest. How was cold plasma discovered?
Well, it's kind of it gets lost and then rediscovered. And so one of the things that historically plasma is around us in the universe, considering that the physics side of it says that, you know, the highest percentage of solid, liquid, gases, and plasmas is the highest percentage of all of the known substance in the universe. When we look on Earth, we don't find much of it, but for instance, the Northern Lights, that's an atmospheric plasma. Lightning is an atmospheric plasma. Lightning is a high energy charged gas, literally, that's unable to conduct the electricity. And so, it's been around us. The discoveries of atmospheric cold plasmas, I can go back literally to the turn of the 1900s. And there was actually patents related to applying high voltages to different kinds of gases to manipulate the composition of those, and then the effect on processing of different types of materials. So at least since the 1900s, it's been recognized. The original work that was documented in regards to ionization and generation of things would go back into the 1860s. There was an awareness or recognition if you took and applied a high voltage across air, you would create ozone. And so that's, in essence, ozone generation. That process, historically, of applying a high voltage would be a plasma generation. And then that was kind of rediscovered back in the 70s and then into the 80s and the 90s, where folks said, hey, this has a lot of potential here because we're able to create unique molecules of different energetic levels, and we can do that very efficiently.
Okay, pause that one more time around. Ozone is a way that you can basically oxidize mold. You can kill mold. You still have to clean it off the wall, but you can kill mold with ozone. And you can basically neutralize that mold to where it's now safe to clean off. And using different types of filters, like HEPA filters for your vacuum system, when you clean it off and suck that into the vacuum, it'll filter out, you know, any possible living ones that could have lived on there. And they also have technologies by which little tiny nanoparticles can be treated and put onto the surface to where you may have mold problems, that now they have little teeny tiny sharp spikes. And so when the mold pollen tries to land on a surface, then it basically severs it and destroys it right out of the gate. And so you can basically solve, you know, that problem once and for all with an understanding of what's actually going on this level with this type of energy. So we're talking unlimited applications. Once again, if you are limited to your imagination, if you can't think outside the box, then you're not going to understand what it is that I'm trying to say here. They've quite literally opened the door to clean, renewable, alternative, free energy with just what they've been saying right here alone. And these are mainstream industries that are trying to get these technologies patented and get them into, you know, circulation for the medical industry, fuel industry, even in the waste industry, in order to be able to, you know, basically treat water, you know, like a water treatment plant. Instead of using chemicals anymore, you could use this technology to destroy any bad bacteria, E. coli or whatever, so that you can now recycle this water again. Think about what you're hearing here. Let's keep going.
Because we don't have to apply significant amounts of heat. It's not a thermal process. It's more of an electrical process. And so that's then led to kind of a rediscovery of the applications for plasma technology in the 21st century.
Excellent. What has recent research shown as an effective food processing technology? Are we able to apply these concepts to food processing?
Well, we can, and that's part of where the work that we're doing along with other groups around the world. The technology that we've developed here within our laboratory is the cold plasma technology, which we can do inside of a container or a sealed package. And that's somewhat unique. Up to this point, a majority of the active researchers on cold plasmas have been creating jets. So in essence, you could think of a jet.
Let me say something real quick. When he's talking about creating plasma in a sealed package, see, all these little particles that are in anything, when you got any kind of, even mold can grow in a vacuum, all right? And it depends on how strong the vacuum is, I'm sure, but if there's any moisture content in there, even mold can grow in a vacuum. But whatever it ends up inside that package, whenever you put it, you know, in there, can quite literally from the outside be ionized into cold plasma, killing off any bacteria inside there. And so a lot of the technologies that are being developed out there are, you know, for like in the food industry or stuff like that. And even if you go out and you look around about different, hand sanitizing systems, ways that they sanitize medical, tools or whatever. You're talking about technology that you don't even have to put a whole lot of energy in order to get this, to kill bacteria, ultraviolet light, different types of, water treatments with that kind of technology and such. So let's keep moving right here.
Being, just a high velocity airstream that passes through some type of a high voltage field, and then out of the end of that jet would be these plasma, so to speak, clouds. And within that, it would contain these reactive molecules of different kinds. And that's primarily what's been done for the last 20, 30 years. There's a process called a corona discharge, and a corona is a type of plasma, and that's been used to treat packaging films. to manipulate surface properties. And so that process, there's a jet of this plasma that comes out, exposes the film. As the film rolls very quickly through this cloud, it alters surface properties, makes them more amenable to putting ink on there, and so on.
Yeah, what he's saying right there, if you can picture this in your head, there's a water jet out there where you can actually pressurize water, some of which they actually put little sharp particles in the water to cut through steel, and they get like perfect cuts through there. Some of which you don't need any of these sharp particles in there. The water pressure itself is more than enough to do exactly the same job. But if you think about like electrons flying down this deal right here in a jet of gas or whatever and traveling down there, they have technology available to literally etch metals. You could sit there with a 3D printing style engraving system, and you can etch things and then put a layer of superconductive nanocarbon in that groove that you just designed on there and build circuit boards with this type of technology. So it's pretty impressive. It, like I said, you're only limited by your imagination, because what they've been explaining to you right now, count it on your hands if you can, how many different applications we've talked about so far, and all of it is the same exact energy, just sped up and slowed down. It's as simple as that. All matter that exists out there, solid, liquid, gas, it's just the way that you put the energy to it. If you heat up ice, it turns to the ice now turns to a liquid. If you continue to add heat to it, it turns to a gas. And if you continue to add heat to it, it turns to a plasma. So that's pretty impressive. Once you understand those basic physics of it, all we're doing is speeding up, slowing down, moving energy from point A to point B. And if we want to be able to move energy in a super efficient manner using things like superconductors, then we need to understand the physics of what science says is going on right there. They talk about how some gases are non-conductive until they're in the plasma state, and then they become conductive. So imagine, instead of copper wire, you actually had a gas-filled tube, basically like almost like fiber optics. It's flexible, but it's got a small amount of gas in there that's ionized into plasma, and you're using it to transmit electricity from one point to the next, and you're doing it without thermal plasma. You're doing it with the cold plasma side, to where this wiring doesn't even get hot anymore. That's thinking outside the box, folks. And if you put this knowledge in the hands of the people, knowledge is power. And if you take this bit of information, this little nugget of information, and you expand on it and research into what it is I'm saying, it's something that is achievable by the average Joe. It's that it is so ridiculously simple to produce plasma. It's so ridiculously simple to produce high voltages. Now, when it comes down to running the inefficient appliances that we've actually, I had the misfortune of having to use, on one hand, they're engineered to work. They work. But they waste a lot of energy. And they could be improved upon. Everything from electric motors to, generating systems and so on down the line, whether it be for the internal combustion engine, even this technology right here, utilized properly in an internal combustion engine, you could engineer that internal combustion engine to be so incredibly fuel efficient that the harder you mash down on the gas, the less fuel you have to use because of the way that the energy is being used. I hope that by the time this particular show's over, that you have a little bit of more of an understanding to realize that we're beyond the space age. The technology that is unfolding before your very eyes at a rapid pace if was taken in the proper direction, could do wonderful things for humanity. For those with the ears to hear and the eyes and the vision and the mind to think outside the box, you've got what you've been looking for. You got all the knowledge. You got access to tools and technology unlike anything in the history of time. And those same tools and technology can be utilized to make new things and to make new advancements. We could decide right now whether, while we're standing at this crossroad, do we want to take humanity into an awesome future to where knowledge is equally distributed throughout the entire world so that these people out there can benefit from all these different advancements. You could literally cure the world. That simple. And I know what you've been told. I know what the school book says. But here at Mad Science, we're not going to hold back on any bit of knowledge, any bit of truth. We're going to put it out there and hope to trigger those minds that like to think outside the box, the creativity that you were designed to be. And what you could do with this information, it could be such a wonderful thing for this world. They have taken many technologies in the past and they have made weapons of war. These technologies could neutralize weapons of war. These technologies could quite literally be a defense mechanism against biological attack. They could clean your house from any pathogens that could potentially make you ill. They could purify your food before you cooked it. They could keep all the bad portions at bay. They could basically bring us into a super efficient energy usage that would work in perfect, and I'm saying perfect, harmony with nature. But the key to all this is right here. An idea is just an idea until you're willing to accept that idea and take it and run with it to see how far that you can go. We've got enough people around in alternative energy, alternative medicine, and average people that would love to be able to cure certain things like cancer, and you heard the lady talking about it would destroy the MRSA virus. Things that people would normally die from or have to have amputated limbs can be resolved. This technology and hyperbaric oxygen treatment technology and oxygen treatment in general could solve so many issues in the medical industry that it would blow your doors off. It would get the average person away from the butchery that is the medical industry. It would get the average person away from the hypocrisy and the ripoff that is the drug industry. They want to sell you drugs with a list of side effects longer than your arm and say, well, this is for this particular deal, but I'm thinking when I'm reading this and I'm listening to the possible side effects, not excluding death, that their medicine is flawed. But you take this information that I'm presenting here today, that these folks have presented to the world out there, some of which are putting patents on right and left, but the moment you understand that energy and how to use it, we don't have to buy their drugs anymore. We don't have to buy their fuel anymore. We don't have to buy anything from the system anymore. We can not only create it, 3D print it, write it out, draw it, whatever. We have the computer technology, we have the skill set, we have the talent, we have the materials, all readily available for free. Our combined resources together of all the average Joes and average Janes in the world who are fed up with a system that is butchering our people, poisoning our planet, and making it intolerable for all of us to try to survive in comfort. We can solve it. I'm telling you, we can solve it. You take what you've heard here today, what you've heard here yesterday and the day before that, and all this information, and gather it up. Listen to it once, listen to it twice, listen to it 1,000 times if you have to. Let it sink in. Talk amongst yourself and with other people out there, and begin to realize that you literally have in your grasp the power to resolve everything that is supposedly a problem in the world that we find ourselves living in. Plain and simple. So let's keep on going here.
What we've been doing is we actually took that concept and said, okay, can we do it inside of a package without putting anything in the package other than the gas and the food product? And that's kind of the uniqueness that we've been able to demonstrate. And through that, there's some advantages that are unique and I think make the technology in the concept that we've kind of designed much more amenable to the food industry from the standpoint of it's in the package, so it's self-contained, which allows a much longer exposure to the plasma species than just running them underneath some type of a plasma jet. And so in our work, what we've demonstrated is...
Did you know, and you can look into it, that some potato chip manufacturers put, I believe it's nitrogen gas inside the potato chip bag so that it helps to preserve it longer and doesn't allow it to go stale so quickly. Think about that.
We can get very high reductions, 4, 5, 6, even to the point of sterilization, which would be up to 10 to 12 log reductions of these pathogenic bacteria on food products inside of that finished package. And so that's kind of an exciting area that we're doing a lot of work to try to understand why and how it's happening. And that's kind of where we are in the process. But it does have a lot of potential, I think, for many different applications in the food industry because it's not a heating process. So you can retain many of those heat-sensitive nutrients, minimize color changes and things like that with the produce or whatever the product might be. Whereas typically the alternative has historically been heat. So you think of canning something in a can, for example.
Well, Dr. Keener, I'm going to note in your web description that part of your duties are for extension, providing food entrepreneur workshops and technical assistance, providing HACCP and sanitary workshops for food companies, responding to inquiries on food processing and food regulations. I'll also note that you are a PE, a professional engineer. Is that correct?
Yes, if I'm a licensed engineer. Yep.
So let me ask, with those couching remarks, what is the potential for food plasma technology to be engaged in food production?
I think from the scientific perspective, things look very promising.
I got to pause for a second. He said he's a licensed engineer. Why would you have to have a license to be an engineer? You know, the government say, well, you got to have the permission to engineer things. Folks, you take your creativity, you become an engineer. You understand simple science and basic physics, and you take those simple sciences and basic physics, and you create and build things, you are an engineer. You don't need a license to be an engineer. Now, if you are just apt to have to want the recognition as an engineer to go get your little sheepskin or piece of paper, whatever they call it, your degree... Well, then spend your money and go do that. But if you want to be a real scientist and a real engineer, then take the creativity that is within your mind and understand a little bit of science and a little bit of physics and mechanics and so on down the line, and take those things that you've learned and engineer your way to a better future. You don't need a license to be an engineer. You don't need a license to be a scientist. You don't need a college degree to do what I'm saying can be done.
Encountered a situation in our work yet that we haven't been able to show significant improvement over the existing alternatives. Where the research continues is getting things to the point of both regulatory approval process, which takes many years, and then also, you know, understanding and putting that into a commercial process, which has its own challenge.
And right there, you got to try to get new technologies past regulatory laws, red tape, whatever the heck you want to call it, regulations. If you want to be able to get it into the market, you got to have the government's permission to get this technology out there to the people. That's if you follow their system. And I'm saying forget their system. Design it, test it, prove it, check out for safety issues and everything, and put your information on the table, open source, to better humanity, and you'll see a change in this world. I used to say many times, it's hard to sell a widget when everyone out there owns a widget. Do you want to buy a widget? No, sorry, I already got 10 of them. You see what I'm saying, folks? Take this knowledge while you have access to this knowledge before they change the structure of how you can even get access to this knowledge. There's places in this world like the Vatican that have libraries that you're not privy to. There's places in the government that have libraries that you are not privy to. And if you're not a super security clearance and under the gun of the regulations that say that you can't never talk about anything you see in this specific room to anyone outside this specific room, then that technology, that design, that idea, that information is locked up for the super elite alone. Right now, enough information is on the table that has already made it out here to your ears that gives you the power to quite literally take back your world. Plain and simple. The question is whether or not you're willing to accept that responsibility and take that knowledge, expand on it, and pass it along to everybody that you meet. This information could change the world.
Challenges with regard to the speed and certain desirable end conditions that the manufacturer wants to achieve for maximum consumer acceptance.
Well, Dr. Keener, I note that your publication will be coming out. It has been accepted in the Journal of Applied Microbiology. And the title is Cold Plasma Can Kill E. coli Microbes Within Packaging, so providing a useful tool in situations of post-processing contamination, according to your research. Are there any other projects that we'd like to share with our thousands of listeners that are narrowly interested in food production?
I will throw out there that this work and some follow-up studies that are soon to be published, that are under review now, are being conducted as part of a European-funded project called SafeBag. And there's more information on SafeBag. If they do a quick search for SafeBag food safety, that will show up, because that's a FP7, a Framework Program 7, which is a European-funded project on commercialization. And this is the underlying technology that's supporting that project.
Dr. Keener, I'd like to thank you for your wonderful contribution to our program and request if you could just briefly summarize our talking points, the following talking points. What are foodborne pathogens? What are traditional methods? What is cold plasma? How was cold plasma discovered? And how is research shown that it can have potential for food processing applications?
Sure. The foodborne pathogen are bacteria or viruses that make persons sick that are transmitted via food and food products, so consumption of foods or handling of foods. Traditional methods for killing those foodborne pathogens would be heat. Also, irradiation is another technology that's available and out there. Cold plasma is a ionized gas where the gas itself remains at roughly the room temperature condition. However, there is molecules generated via electron. There's electrons that are removed from some of the molecules, and those impact others to break them into single elemental forms that are very reactive, like single oxygen, single nitrogen, and so on. The research that we've done has demonstrated that being able to generate a cold plasma allows us to adjust the concentrations of these bactericidal molecules within a package, and in doing so, we can very effectively kill traditional foodborne pathogens, which would be the bacteria, and also have ongoing work with viruses as part of that. And I think the potential for the technology is very compelling, and I think very exciting from my perspective, in that it's appears to be offering an alternative to existing traditional methods that currently we don't have available.
Well, Dr. Keener, I also note on your biography that you do provide technical assistance to food companies on commercialization of new technologies such as cold plasma, and you also provide expert witness testimony in legal cases. And if you'd like to discuss those two potentialities?
Sure. So my background and experience, I've been working in food technologies for the last 20 years or so. I do a lot of work with companies, from the entrepreneur starting a company to global multi-billion dollar food companies, in evaluation and demonstration of new technologies, both as a educational, working through the Purdue University here as a researcher and professor, both instructing students and doing research, and then also outside, I have a private company, Keener Technology, that works with companies in concert with their interest to move things forward in terms of improving safety and quality, and improving environmental sustainability, and reducing water and wastewater, and so on, as part of an overall global perspective.
Well, Dr. Keener, I have taken license to post your contact information on the AME Food Testing Show site. Would you invite our listeners to contact you if they have additional questions?
Sure, I would be happy to talk with them.
Very good. Dr. Keener, I would like to express my personal appreciation for your appearance on today's show in light of your busy schedule, and allow your closing remarks.
Well, I want to appreciate your interest in the technology, and happy to share kind of what we have going on. I think there's a lot of opportunity for the plasma technology and a lot of other exciting technologies that are coming down the road, so to speak, for the food industry. And I think that, collectively, as we all work towards that common goal of improving the safety of food, I think ultimately we're going to be able to get there. So I appreciate the time to talk with you here this morning, and want to wish everyone a happy holidays and a happy new year.
Thank you, Dr. Keener, and wish you a great day, and thank you again for your time and your thought-breaking research into reducing food pathogens and making food safer for all.
Thank you, Andy.
Have a great day.
So there you go, another example of why this particular technology, plasma technology, is really exciting. It's going to be beneficial to the world if used properly. Now, I got to check, I think this is the next one right here in line. Let me see what I've got going on here.
Kevin Keener, a Purdue University food science professor, is studying new methods to kill harmful bacteria that contaminate foods.
So what we have here, we've developed a atmospheric cold plasma technology that we can apply to products that are inside of sealed packages. The way that that works is we apply a high voltage, and we utilize or use the package itself as a dielectric barrier. A dielectric barrier is something that prevents electrical current flow, but it will allow the transport and movement of voltage. So in essence, that the package just becomes a insulator, and the voltage will pass through the package into the gas that's contained inside the package.
This process creates a wide variety of bacteria-killing molecules, including ozone, nitrogen oxides, hydrogen peroxide, and many others.
That collective process is referred to as atmospheric cold plasma. The benefit of having a plasma inside of the package is it allows us to kill bacteria or other types of microorganisms that could be present, viruses, yeast, molds, and so on. And we can do that once the package is closed.
Another advantage of atmospheric cold plasma is that the quality of the products is relatively unchanged.
In the solid foods, if we look at, if you think of like produce, packaged products, leafy greens, and many of the vegetables and things you would find ready to eat, such as sprouts and things like that, we're doing a lot of work looking at ways, using this technology and trying to optimize the conditions under which we can achieve a significant bactericidal reduction, improving the safety of those products, extending the shelf life, so improving the quality on products, and being able to do that without any changes to the product.
Keener's research is showing promise for practical application.
The technology is very low in terms of cost. The actual power needed to essentially sterilize something inside of a gallon-sized bag is in the range of tenths of a cent. Total power is about 50 to 100 watts of energy, so a light bulb or less than a light bulb of energy. Treatment times, we're talking in the range of seconds to maybe a minute at most for most types of products. And all of these in results combined show a lot of promise for potentially pasteurization or even sterilization of products using a cold technology. So it's no heat required in the process. It would allow longer shelf life on products, less spoilage, and safer products. So there's a lot of implications that I think are very exciting, both in food and medical-type products for long-term success.
So the last podcast that I want to play right here is the initial one that my friend Thomas shared with me about basically cold fire. So I'm going to play this one right here, but probably not going to play it all the way through because close to the end, it's basically telling you actually how they built it. So if you want to watch how they actually built this particular device, then the link is in the TCT chat room, both Shaziz radio chat rooms, and the Awake radio chat room in the Super Chat. So if you want to copy and share those links with other people to see how they've actually built it in case you decide maybe you want to try to build it and test it yourself. There's a lot of, you've heard a lot of applications so far. Imagine a day when if you go home and you've been outside in the environment and everything, you know, that you usually drag in with you, like the dirt and all that kind of stuff, or, you know, pollens, things that you normally wouldn't want in your house. As you're walking through the front door, cold plasma technology could quite literally decontaminate your entire body, clothing and all, on the way through the door so that you're not dragging stuff into your house. You're talking futuristic, space age kind of stuff. Like I said, you're only limited by your imagination. So let's listen to this one right here.
Okay, we are at about 35.
All right, and hit in the view.
What you just saw was prototype number 4 of a cold plasma torch that a friend and I have been working on for the past year or so. Spoiler alert, while number 4 looked very cool, all that whooshing is actually a sign of it not working, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Before I jump to version 18, which actually works and produces a beautiful, cold flame, we need to back up and first understand what these things are and what they're trying to do. First, I said these torches are cold plasma torches, and that's true. The flame that comes out of the end is a hair over room temperature, and you can touch it without issue. But how is that possible, and why would I want such a thing? The reason I wanted a torch like this are threefold. First, cold plasma is amazing, and I just wanted to see it for myself. I'd heard about it years ago, and have wanted to try and make some sense. I mean, honestly, telling somebody that you made a torch that makes cold fire will have them looking at you like you're a wizard instantly. Second, while it's cold enough to touch, the plasma is full of highly reactive, charged particles, and when it touches microorganisms, it rips them to shreds. So it's a powerful tool for sterilization that won't damage the thing it's sterilizing. It even kills viruses and spores, in theory. And finally, all that reactivity makes it the perfect thing to do some really interesting chemistry with. For example, you can mix some CO2 into the argon gas that this is run on, and it'll convert it to carbon monoxide and O2, the former of which is a very important industrial feedstock. And it'll do it at crazy high efficiencies. Or feed in a mix of CO2 and hydrogen, and it'll convert it to methane and other hydrocarbons. I'm leaving a lot out, but you can see the appeal of a thing that in theory turns air and water into fuel. Beyond that, I knew that all the skills necessary to build these torches are basically the exact same skills needed to build other hotter
Alright. Let me rewind that just a second, because I want you to hear that again. See if I didn't go too far.
...to methane and other hydrocarbons. I'm leaving a lot out, but you can see the appeal of a thing that in theory turns air and water into fuel. Beyond that, I knew that all the skills necessary to build these torches are basically the exact same skills needed to build other hotter plasma torches and little ion engines. In fact, all of these torches are technically ion engines, just maybe not very efficient ones without a bit of tweaking. So once I have the vacuum system set up, I'll be able to quickly make some ion engines, which ought to be a lot of fun. Now, all that sounds amazing, but we still haven't discussed what cold plasma is and how we make it. Plasma is the fourth state of matter after gas. To review, a solid is atoms held together firmly, a liquid is atoms held together only very loosely, and a gas is atoms that can only interact weakly and move around freely. All the interactions in these cases are mostly mediated by the electrons orbiting the atoms. A plasma takes all this one step further. Under the right circumstances, typically when a gas gets ridiculously hot, the electrons orbiting the atoms can be given enough energy to detach from their host atoms and float around freely themselves. When this happens, the various atoms become highly charged due to a lack of electrons, and it forms a soup of charged particles. Fire is actually a really good example of this. In the chemical reaction that causes fire, an enormous amount of energy is released, allowing the electrons to come off for a moment until things cool down. You can actually see all this happen if you watch a match in slow motion. Striking the match generates sparks and a cloud of gases, and when the two mix, the chemical reaction gets going and things heat up quickly. The gas begins to glow from a mixture of black body radiation, also known as heat glow, which is proportional to its temperature, and the ionization of atoms and molecules in the mixture. For more about both, I've put a link to my spectroscopy video where we explore both in detail. However, something important to understand is that there are two sets of temperatures in a plasma, the electron temperature and the ion or atom temperature. With fire, because of the way the energy is released, the atoms themselves get very hot as the reaction progresses and the electrons whiz around, crashing into things. And in fact, in most plasmas, the same thing happens. As you put more energy into it, the temperature of the atoms will rise rapidly. But we wouldn't be talking about this today if that was the only option. If you could somehow apply energy in a way that just heats the electrons and had some way to keep the atoms cold, you would still have a glowing plasma whose electrons are anywhere from 2 to 15,000 degrees, but it would feel cold to the touch as electrons lack the momentum to transfer much of that heat to a large object due to their tiny mass. The reason fire feels hot is because gases and ions are at high temperatures, and since they have more mass, they can transfer that energy to your finger more easily. Okay, now that we understand the basics of plasma, how do we make some? Well, anyone who's played with high voltage knows that a sufficiently high voltage source lets you pull long streams of plasma as soon as the wires get close enough together. What's happening there is the electrons in the wire have sufficient energy to literally shoot out of the wire and travel a fair distance in search of ground, so that they can release their energy. As the wires get closer together, some of the electrons make it across the gap. As they do this, they crash into gas molecules and ionize them, knocking more electrons free. This makes the air more conductive, so more electrons can flow. This repeats until you have a hot soup of plasma which conducts very readily. At that point, trillions and trillions of electrons can suddenly flow, which rapidly heats everything up. What we want to do is take advantage of the electrons jumping out of the wire, but we need to inhibit their ability to cross the gap and form a hot arc. To give them a little extra help, we don't want to just use higher voltages. Instead, we want to increase the frequency of the applied voltage until it's in the low radio ranges. If we use something like a microwave transformer to generate our high voltage, it'll be running at 60 Hz. That means the voltage climbs and drops 60 times per second. Considering the distance the electrons fly is proportional to the voltage, there are these distinct peaks where more electrons are coming out and flying further. By increasing the frequency, we increase the amount of time the electrons are able to escape the wire. However, as we increase the frequency, we also start to get what are called near and far field effects. Radio is, after all, just an alternating current on a set of bare wires at its simplest. By increasing the frequency all the way into low radio ranges, the wire now also radiates radio waves along with the electrons it spews out. These waves can themselves energize the flying electrons, allowing them to fly further and behave differently. Primarily, it easily allows them to fly free of the wire and try to find ground to release their energy. To maximize the effect of the high voltage, high frequency, we place a thin insulator between the two wires as a dielectric barrier. As the electrons leave the wire, they now hit a surface that they can't really go through. So they spread out and the insulator builds up a charge on its surface, essentially forming a tiny capacitor. If this insulator was a tube, we could set it up so that all the electrons are being spit out into a stream of easily ionizable gas like argon. The electrons would ionize the gas, turning it into a plasma, and the RF would help keep it energized. If we get the gas flow just right, we should be able to gently push this plasma out of the tube. The flowing gas makes it such that the electrons absorb most of the energy as the gas atoms just aren't exposed to enough energy to heat them up in the short time that they're in the tube.
I want to pause this for just a second. And if you go watch this video and you actually watch the actual diagram that he's showing on there, when you see this, you'll understand how it is that Stanmeyer's water injection spark plugs, his to get his dune buggy to run, how they actually function. So you would basically be able to design a spark plug system that could actually retrofit existing engines to make them run even more efficiently. Not to mention the fact that when you talk about the fuel injection side of there, you can control the amount of fuel by sending it in with this type of technology. So, even existing engines can be improved upon using what you've heard here today. The spark plugs, the way that the ignition system actually functions inside there, the fuel delivery system, and so on down the line, you can literally custom design fuel sources using different materials that will give you the perfect burn every time to run that internal combustion engine. If you want to engineer a vehicle that will run on pure distilled water, you now have the knowledge and the technology of how to make it happen. With everything that we have put out there on the table, as far as induction technology, compression ignition, all the different types of ways that internal combustion engines run now, and the differences between heating and cooling and so on, heat expands and cold contracts, all that knowledge combined, put into your mind, engineering an engine that is the perfect heat engine that will run any fuel that you put inside this at an incredible efficient manner with little to no pollutants on the other side. Think about that. The technology that we have at our disposal right now is actually able to be built in a garage setting. It's actually able to be built with off-the-store shelf parts. It's actually able to be simply understood by just understanding simple science, simple physics, and simple mechanics. You could take this knowledge and engineer a perfect future. if you so choose to do so.
Before we go further, a word about safety. We're working with high voltages and gases which, if not handled properly, can be very dangerous. I wouldn't suggest you attempt to replicate this unless you know what you're doing. Use common sense and good high voltage practice if you intend to replicate this. With that out of the way, to build a torch around this concept is simple in theory, but very difficult.
Alright, so with that said, if you want to see the actual construction of the cold fire torch that this individual's talking about, you can go watch the video, because, I mean, I could play it through, but it's just, you're going to hear it, but you wouldn't be able to, unless you can visualize it in your mind of what exactly that he's trying to say, you might miss out on something. So that link has been posted in the chat room for you. But anyway, I said that science has made some pretty large claims. Science has said that they've done some pretty amazing things. Government agencies such as NASA have basically told us and showed us some space-age technology without any kind of explanation of how this actually functions, to the extent where we could actually replicate it and test it ourselves, because obviously it's patented and there's certain information that they want to keep under their hat. But just what you've heard today ought to be a little nugget of truth that it would get you inspired to want to look deeper. There are people out there dying of unnecessary diseases that could quite literally be cured with homemade devices. Literally. If you understand what's going on when gas is energized into the fourth state of matter, and with the fact that now you got what they call cold plasma. You see, what he was saying in the old that one podcast was that they had to use heat to destroy bacteria and germs. AKA, you have to cook your food really good, because there might be parasites, or there might be something that has been transmitted from the factory, wherever, or the field, wherever, whoever picked the fruit or whatever, basically. Like on tomatoes or lettuce, where E. coli might have, because they used the dirty water or something in the general area where they picked the fruit or vegetables, and they washed the dirt off with this water that may or have been infected with E. coli virus. But with the cold plasma technology, you're not introducing heat to it in the conventional sense. But you're destroying that E. coli virus before you ever even use it, and then you could use your water to, rinse it off a second time. So, getting sick to begin with wouldn't even be an option. And if you understand what I've just explained to you, you have technology that's capable of quite literally doing some space-age stuff, such as producing a force field around your body using this type of technology, so that anything that you breathe or anything that wants to try to land on your body, it can't survive. You can't even bring a live mold spore into your house. You can't bring a live pollen into your house. Somebody who's allergic to, has allergies or whatever. There's methods by which you could actually treat the clothing that you wear that's perfectly harmless to you, but is devastating to any microorganism that might want to land on you. Think about that. You could have treated clothes that, if you were under biological attack, it wouldn't be able to stick to your clothing. And in any airborne pathogens that could be thrown down on you to try to attack you or kill you would be killed before they ever even got into your lungs or on your person. This is like amazing. And all these different options that you've heard in every single one of these podcasts don't even scratch the surface of the information that is available for you if you're willing to research it. If you're willing to take the time to try to understand what it is that I've just been trying to share with everybody, what I have been trying to share with people for years, it's the reason why I was always talking about plasma, plasma, plasma. Because in the millivolt range, you can produce plasma. There's atmospheric plasma. And not only because when plasma, this gas is in a neutral state, it's a chaotic state, but now this gas can be used to send electricity through. It becomes conductive when it's in the plasma state. Because it's all these free electrons out there are able to conduct energy through them. And so with that said, there are multitudes of all types of applications for what I've just explained to you. And so not only would you be able to transmit energy through superconductors efficiently, but you would also be able to transmit data, which is energy being pulsed, and there is a receiver on the other end that can take those dots and dashes or ones and zeros and turn them back into usable, understandable messages again. It unlocks the future unlike anything in the history of time. And we're not talking about some hoodoo voodoo version of plasma that you gotta love your reactor in order to get it to function properly. You just need to understand the process, the simple process. It is ridiculously simple. If you look at the electron theory and how it's all explained, and you can get out there and find a visual of what they say electricity actually is and how it actually functions, And understand things like resistance and current flow and so on down the line, just by understanding something as simple as plumbing, you can understand electronics. You can understand electricity. And so it brings the knowledge down to everyone's level. If you've got a level of understanding where you can understand basic science and basic physics and basic mechanics, and by now, if you've been listening to the Mad Science Show, you've got a really good handle on that because of the way that I keep explaining things to people in simplicity, which frustrates those who are of so-called higher educational status with sheepskins or degrees or whatever. But it brings it down on your level where now that technology is within your grasp. And it's not something you got to go out and buy. You know, it's not something you got to go out and be a rocket scientist to understand. Just explain to you how you can take your garbage and turn it into a heat source, a fuel source, and quite literally generate electricity by using that fuel source to run the generators that would require the amount of torque necessary to overcome the resistance of what these inefficient appliances that we utilize have to go through. They need that amount of power, you know, according to the way that it's set up. The system is set up so inefficiently, 50 hertz and 60 hertz, with a lot of current. That current meets resistance, which then in turn causes heat. And you just heard how you can energize gas into plasma and turn that plasma into a superconductor. And by taking that knowledge, that technology, and expanding upon it, now you can engineer perfectly precise, super efficient machines, electrical devices, electronics, and even medical devices that can solve issues everywhere. No more garbage. It takes what you saw on one of the Back to the Future, Mr. Fusion, where he pulls up in his time machine and he pulls garbage out of the trash. and he sticks it down into Mr. Fusion, and that became his fuel source for him to be able to travel through time and space using his time machine. It is science fiction now become science fact. If you understand what you just heard right there. They've already told you in Star Trek and Back to the Future and all these movies of future technologies to come. They showed you how they could take a device and run it over you and cure you of a disease. Dr. Royal Raymond Rice talked about it. Tesla knew about it. And many of the other alternative energy researchers from times gone by that are no longer in existence because somebody didn't approve of them either telling people about free energy or fuel systems that required nothing more than water and a high frequency radio wave to separate that water without using the inefficient method of electrolysis in order to do so. So you can use fuel for water, you can use trash for water, you can use the air that you breathe for water, you can use every bit of whatever materials around you for an energy source. And the crazy thing about it is, folks, and this will probably be the one that gets me shot, mocked and ridiculed. The crazy thing about it is no matter what you do to any material on this earth that we live on in this world, you cannot destroy it at all. All you're doing is changing the chemical and the molecular structure of any chemical and creating a byproduct. Basically, new raw materials. You're never going to run out of what they call fossil fuel. You're never going to run out of water. You're never going to run out of what is the basic makeup of dirt itself. If you think about where dirt comes from, it might just surprise you. If you think about where you come from, it might really surprise you. If you think about what all the makeup of this carbon-based world that we find ourselves living in, this magnificent thermal electric generator self-contained biosphere that recycles every single molecule, every single structure and substructure on the planet, in the world, whatever, it is mind-blowing. We not only are in a self-contained biosphere of epic proportion, but everything has been taken care of us, taken care of for us, so that all we had to do was understand what was going on and then use our creativity to see how wonderful we could make this world that we live in. And if time and space is what science says, then we can literally, with the technology unfolding before your very eyes, boldly go where no man has gone before. If we're meant to leave this domain that we live in, this world, this earth, this system that we live in, if we're meant to leave it and go to different stars and worlds and galaxies, then we have every bit of knowledge necessary to make it so. But if for some reason we're stuck here, we have every bit of knowledge and information and resources necessary to make this world a quite literal heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak. Wherein you don't have to hear any words about people starving, sicknesses, and so on down the line. And if you fall for the lie that this world is overpopulated or could ever get overpopulated by humans and that we could actually destroy ourselves by destroying the environment completely, then you haven't paid attention to what's been said. Here or any other time. That this world is in control. Nature is in control. The system is in control. we can manipulate the system, we can mix this with that, and we can do all kinds of things, but nothing that we build, nature cannot break back down into its natural building blocks. And so we have the potential to literally make a perfect world if we so choose to do so, using mad science. Regular science is pretty much sold their soul to the system. Sold their soul to the devil, so to speak. But you and I, we both reach for the stars. We reach for a perfect world and answers to problems that exist, and we want answers to questions that we've been asking for since the dawn of time. Now there's this vast sum of knowledge flood going right by us. And the question is, will we pick it up? Will we utilize it for the better of all humanity? Or will we utilize it to destroy one another and continue the cycle of never-ending destruction of humanity? With or without us, folks, this world will continue on. With or without us, this world will rejuvenate itself. With or without us, or any species left on this planet, this world that we live in, this world will continue to do what it has been done since the dawn of creation. Now my thing is, common sense should dictate that we take this knowledge while we have the opportunity to do so, while we have the voices to hear, the eyes to see, the minds to understand, and we take it to the next level. And we do something that the prior civilizations of this world have failed to do. We succeed. We succeed in a manner in which that all people are treated equally. All people can live in comfort and luxury. All people have a home. All people have food. You asked, mad science has delivered. Now the question is, what are you going to do with it? What are we, the people, going to do with it? Let's take a music break. Stay tuned, you're listening to Mad Science.
Thank you. is the dream. The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run, because when the old boys raise on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Приступила к производству компьютеров персональный спутник.
your voice from sleep. So please stay off my back or I will attack. And you don't want that.
Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Oh, it is so much better to laugh than cry.
Yes, it is.
We live in such an amazing world and the time right now that if we take advantage of what we've been gifted, we're going to be just fine. What do you think, Patty?
I agree. It's just, you know, we've got to be the ones to do it, though. We've got to come together somehow, some way. We've got to find a way to get rid of all the useless fluff, the fiction that's out there, the illusion that's out there, and start looking at each other as the solution instead of the enemy.
That's right. And there are, like, you know, people out there that continuously stir the pot trying to keep us pitted against each other. And there are, you know, I mentioned on that one deal where the guy said that he was a licensed engineer. Why would you have to be licensed to be an engineer? You know, why would you have to be licensed to be a scientist? You don't. I mean, look at what engineers do. Look up what scientists do. If you understand basic science and basic physics and mechanics, then you can engineer using that gift of creativity that you've been gifted. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, they call them, what do they call them? Basement scientists?
Yeah, garage science. Some even get derogatory and say pseudoscience.
Yeah, but they're the ones coming up with the solutions that actually work. I mean, you know, on pennies. They don't have the backing of these corporations and such. They're doing this out of their pocket.
Yep.
They're doing this with this and that, wherever they can pick it up and find it. Their ideas are their own, you know, and they make it work. And they follow that they're true to themselves, you know. They actually come up with solutions that actually do work. And if they don't work, then they go back to the drawing board, they figure out why it didn't, and they make it work. It's not found in the corporate side.
And the best thing about it, when you're the one that's actually designing it, you're in control of what you want to do with that information. Share it freely, or, you know, try to, you know, become one of the ones that didn't make it before because the system didn't want them to succeed. But the thing about it is, you know, when you're doing science projects like the ones that I do, that I share with people, it's a roller coaster of finance. You know, it's expensive to get things done properly, but I've actually incorporated in to where I recycle and repurpose things to show the science and physics that I'm trying to explain. And, you know, luckily we have this deal called YouTube where people have posted information like the podcast that I played today, that it puts things also in a perspective that will verify what I've been saying all along. And, you know, now they're talking about cold plasma technology. Royal Raymond Rife was using cold plasma technology, but they called it quackery. You know, remember the old devices that they had the plasma inside them? They had argon gas, and they would generate ozone and stuff like that. And they were talking about how this could actually kill bacteria. Or Raymond Rife was using, you know, higher frequencies that target specific bad bacteria and leave the good ones alone. You remember those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the other day it reminded me. We had severe storms here, and we had lightning strikes, I mean, ungodly amount. The earth was shaking for almost a full hour while this cell was moving through, constant, from the lightning strikes. You could feel the ionization.
Yep.
And I was sitting there thinking, you know, they know that energy can be utilized.
Yep.
They know that from this storm right here, they could probably power a whole freaking city, you know.
They could power the world if they
yeah.
if they understood their own physics. They could power the whole world.
I think they do, but they won't allow it. That would be letting go of the corporate side of profit, and that's what moves the world. If you cannot lay claim and make a profit, then they're not going to support that science. They're not going to do anything that is going to free the people up. You know, we have solar. We have wind generation. That's the only two things, Shaziz, that we've been able to come up with.
Yeah.
You know?
We got more. They just don't put it out there. And as long as you're backed by what they call the petrol dollar.
Yeah.
What's that? Where's the guys like me? I have to use their petrol dollar in order to try to prove free energy, which maybe is ironic. Who knows?
Yeah, it is. It to me, you know, money is the problem. I see it, and I've always seen it as a problem, because what it says to me is your worth is useless. You amount to nothing. Unless you have this currency. If you don't have this currency, then nothing you say and nothing you want to do matters.
That's
if
it.
You don't have this currency.
He who has
if
the
you're
gold
not
makes
one
the
of those players.
That's it. He who has the gold makes the rules.
And look where it's got us. Oh, wow, this money system really is great, isn't it?
Yeah, you got people killing each other over it.
Yeah, And all the money in the world, is helping you out, isn't it? I mean, you're making the big bucks, you're living high, right?
Yeah.
You can go and you can get your Kansas City steak and potato every night, right?
Yeah.
You drive around the best car because you got the money, right?
Yeah.
You work your whole life, Shaziz. I mean, that's what they say. If you work and apply yourself, you're going to get the money and you're going to be really good. Aren't you feeling really good, Shaziz?
No, I'm feeling miserable.
I worked my whole life. I should be feeling really good.
I feel miserable because I know we can turn trash into something better than money. You know, we turn trash into resources so that we do exactly what nature's been doing since the dawn of time. Recycling everything. We're not wasting nothing. And, you know, I think what usually ends up getting me, and this is probably the first time I got tears in my eyes on Mad Science that I can recall, but what ended up getting me was the fact that in somewhere in this world, they say that there's people that are starving. And everybody needs food. Everybody needs that energy, that life source. They need fresh water. They need, you know, people have certain needs. We're not built of iron, so to speak. We have our weaknesses, but we have the tools and the technology to give everyone, fulfill all the needs that they have. And coming from...
But those...
Yes.
Those people that are starving, she says, they don't have any money. So they have no work.
Yep.
Don't you see how this works?
Yeah, and that's sad. And the folks that do have money want to ask you for money and make you feel bad on TV all the time. Talking about saving the starving children. I want to save the starving children too, but I want this world to save the starving children with me. I don't... You know, the burden can't be... On your back, and here's the thing, it has to be on everybody's back first off. But if you give your money to these so-called charities, where's it going? Because I'm 53 years old and I'm still hearing about the same problems. Even when it comes down to animal abuse, I'm still hearing the same exact problems. Homelessness, same exact problems. What has this system got us, Patty?
Nothing. Yeah, exactly. Ask that question. That's what I've been asking for the longest time, and not enough people are asking that. Why am I suffering, although I've played by the rules? Why am I unable to climb up out of this hole? And I've done everything they told me that I should do to be comfortable in my life. Yet, one misstep, you get sick, and your whole world falls apart because you don't get money anymore. You can't work anymore. Your self-worth, your work to society just disappeared, went up in smoke.
Well, I'd like
and
to go
you
out.
Are relegated to the fringe.
Yeah, I'd like to go out on the limb to say that they intentionally make us sick to sell us more medicine.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that sounds tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy. I don't care. It's the truth. Look at the medical industry.
You got a health industry. It's not. Yeah, it's a health industry. Ill health industry. Because everything that they sell you today is for symptom relief, and everything that they sell you for symptom relief causes more symptoms.
Yeah, sell more drugs. Heck, my father-in-law, before he passed away, he was on a whole table full of different types of drugs to balance this and give that and solve this. Or nothing was solved. It was just mixing the chemistry up even worse and making it so that he had even more health problems to contend with. And the doctors won't listen.
Right, Mark was given... three medications when he had a stroke. And, so he was taking these three medications and he was getting worse.
Yep.
And so I went ahead and looked up the symptoms and the side effects, symptoms, and they were, they were the same thing that he was suffering from the stroke. So it seemed like he was getting worse from the stroke, but he wasn't. He was getting worse from the medications. And so the next step for the doctor would have been change his medication strength, right?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't doing good enough, so he'd have to make it stronger.
And in the, and that just kind of perpetuated the same downslope of deterioration. You don't allow your body's immune system to do what it does naturally, and the results is devastating.
Yeah. And it's like that with all the medications. You watch these commercials on TV, and they show you the sad guy who can't go outside because his allergies are acting up, and he's missing out on life, and then he gets this little pill, and all of a sudden he's happy again, and he's out in life, and he is having a really good time, except for he has a chance to have a heart attack or to have trouble breathing, asthma related.
He has failure, liver damage. Huh.
Yeah, but he's happy because he can go outside without sneezing.
Well, today's show was cold plasma, and if people were listening to what was being said, you have technologies that would resolve that asthma problem without ever having any invasive medicine come into the person's body. Because if you understand the process of what's going on during cold plasma, the energy is actually destroying pollens and microorganisms before they ever even get to your body.
Yeah.
And they have technology by which they can actually coat your clothing that would put little teeny tiny microscopic shards on top of your... It wouldn't hurt you at all. You could rub your hand on it all day long, and it wouldn't hurt you at all. But if a little tiny microorganism tried to land on that, it would sever it and destroy it. So, that's a pretty impressive knowledge. Imagine we had clothing that would protect us from the elements outside. And if you had a protective shield, you could wear it on something like your sunglasses. Nobody'd even know you had it under, but it was putting out just a little bit of cold plasma ionizing the air right in between the oxygen you're breathing in. You could still have fresh oxygen, but anything that passed through that stream would be destroyed that was biological or, you know, pathogens like viruses or whatever. It's there. You don't get sick to begin with. You don't even have the symptoms anymore of what the people who suffer from allergies would have to deal with. What do you think?
Well, the thing of it is that there are so many ways that plasma can be used. I watch a lot to do with the universe and with the sun and with the solar system and the plasma that they still deny is part of the universe and our world. And we have enough energy coming from the sun, from the universe, just ambient energy sitting around. Everywhere we move, you know, every time we move, we create energy.
Yep.
So plasma is one aspect that has shown these properties. What do you think these other aspects of this ambient energy can do? Oh. I mean, when we look at nature and we see how prolific nature is, energy is a part of that process. It has to be an energy exchange in order for life to exist.
Yeah.
So, nature has to use this ambient energy in a way that promotes life, right?
Yeah.
Why is it that the only way we can produce energy is in a way that can destroy life?
Yeah,
why is it that that's the only... Yeah, why is that the only energy that we can create? When we can see, science is not stupid. Science is not ignorant unless it chooses to be.
That's
and if
it.
I know nothing, what I know could fit in the bottom of a thimble when it comes to energy and energy creation, and I can see this, we know that they can, Shaziz. and you understand it, so you have a clearer picture. But they still won't follow that train? Why not? Why not, Jesus?
Because of the petrol dollar. You got to keep that continuity of government thing going on. You got to keep that petrol dollar. We have the technology available to us to build superconductors, super efficient machineries, clean, renewable, alternative energy, every bit of what they claim. They talk out of one side of their neck and say, oh, we need to get here. We need to get energy independent. We need to be self-sufficient. We need to be clean, renewable. Nature's been doing it for how long? And if you have, if you're a mainstream scientist and you ain't figured this out now, but yet the two of us, we realize we can see the answers are right there in front of everybody's face. I'm just begging people to pick it up. That's all I'm doing.
That's the thing, is getting through this wall that's been built between the people and their ability to feel their own worth and their own ability to find solutions and implement them. They did a really good job, Shaziz.
Oh, yeah. They indoctrinated, mind-controlled their way to superpower elite status. And like I mentioned earlier in the show, after listening to all this information that these people provided, you know, for their company's purposes or whatever, they just told you that there was a such thing as free energy. But there are organizations out there like the Vatican who have a huge library of knowledge that you're not privy to. There are government agencies out there, NASA and different other agencies out there, and even the government itself, that have huge libraries that you are not privy to. You and me can't go to these libraries. If we're ever allowed into these libraries, then it has to be under the guise that it is classified top secret information that you can look at. But you can't never take and talk about it outside of those, outside of what you just saw. You can never tell anybody about that. And so with that said, that cheats the people out of the solutions available necessary to solve all these problems that they keep saying that we got. And so now, as I'm sitting here doing the Mad Science Show, and I'm sitting here pointing it out. Look at here. Look at that right over there. Take that piece right there, put it with that one, and look what you got. You got a way to clean water, you got a way to boil water, you got a way to heat your house, you got a way to get rid of your trash in an efficient, clean manner. You got every single thing you need to resolve all the problems that these so-called representatives, governments, have failed to do in all these years.
And the corporate side too.
Yeah.
Of course, corporate and government are the same thing.
Yeah, it's all about the money. It's about the petrol dollar, plain and simple.
It's about control, yeah.
Yep.
You know, the money is the shackles, and the control is the bankers, you know,
and the education is the chains that bind us all together so
yes.
that we cannot go outside the box.
Yes. And we love our shackles, I guess.
Yeah,
you know?
And when you got almost nine billion mice in the maze, and a couple of them sitting on top of the wall of the maze saying, "Hey, we can see outside. Won't you guys join us?" They won't listen.
No, they're gonna take and get a slingshot and shoot you down.
That's
get
right.
off of that wall.
They're too busy looking for the cheese. They're too busy telling somebody, "Look, those two are up there. Get them down." They're going to get us all in trouble. They're fearful of their government. That's not how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be for the people, by the people, of the people. The people are supposed to have the power. Yet we have never, ever got out of from underneath the bondage of the dictatorships and the kingships of the world. We're still under the gun of the crown.
Yeah, and I never said that I wanted this person or that person to be king. Who told them that?
Yeah.
Who told them that they could be king? Who told them?
It was the lady of the lake, man. She did it.
Yes. Yes. You know?
Yeah,
right. And then talking about the knowledge, which is, you look at the supposed cradle the birthplace of humanity, of all of us, right?
Yeah.
So in the Middle East and all the wars and everything, how isn't it a coinky-dink that every time they go into one of these ancient cities, the first thing they do is they sack the museums or the historicals, you know, the libraries and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, isn't that a coinky-dink, considering these people supposedly don't care about that knowledge and everything, but you never actually see what happened to the stuff they went in there to get?
Nope.
Or to destroy.
Why is it
somebody got away with that?
Why is it that the Smithsonian Institute is involved in situations where they go out and they protect different, you know, archaeological finds, and then they up and disappear, and nobody knows where they come? So every time somebody happens to catch a glimpse of something, and then they try to say out there on YouTube or the internet to people, hey, you know, look, there might be something different in our history than meets the eye, and they're basically made to be like, you know, you're looking for Bigfoot, you're looking for the unicorn, and, you know, you see what I mean? You're a UFO, ufologist.
Aren't we tired of being played yet?
I am. All I want is for us to take what we've been gifted and use it properly so that everybody can enjoy, you know, the luxuries of what, you know, the elitist so-called. Now, I ain't against somebody being wealthy. If they're wealthy and they worked hard and they got all this money and they get to do things, that's fine. But to sit around with hypocrisy and allow people in this world to starve, and put a commercial on TV and tell you about a starving baby somewhere in the world, that breaks my heart. I'm sure it breaks everybody's heart who sees it.
And there's a guy standing there next to that supposed starving child telling you to give money.
Yeah, and he's wearing a Rolex.
Yeah.
Why don't you hawk that watch, brother, and feed some of them babies? That's what I'm saying.
You know, hypocrisy is alive and well. It always has been. But it's because we let it. We give it life. We say, it's okay. We'll buy that package. You know, we'll buy that lie because it'll make us feel better. If I can send 50 cents a day, then it makes me feel like I did something right and just and good. It gives me that feel good. Then I'm going to go ahead and do it. Whether or not it actually does anything, that's not my concern. Yeah. I can say, hey, look, I paid my 50 cents a day.
Yeah, and they use phrases like, if you care, donate some money, right? What do you mean, if I care? Of course, any human with a decent heart is going to care, you know?
If they cared, there would not be a starving child in this world.
That's what I'm saying.
If they cared, there would not be anyone that did not have clean water. There would not be anyone who did not have a safe, comfortable, warm, dry place to sleep. It wouldn't exist because we have everything we need. The resources they use cutting down these forests, we don't need to do that. We have better building materials than wood. We don't have to use wood. We don't have to go to the rainforest to cut down ancient trees because some rich guy decided he liked the color of that wood and it made him feel important to be able to say, look, this rare wood I bought. You know?
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
You know what
this
aggravates
is what we
me?
Do.
What aggravates me is everybody out there who's listening, if you get an opportunity to look it up, they give like 50 million or 50 billion, I can't remember which one it is, even if it's only $50 million to the UN Climate Change Fund. And with that, supposed to solve the so-called climate change, global warming problem of the world, you just listen to me lay out the freaking entirety of all the information that could potentially, not potentially, definitely solve this so-called issue. $50 million is a lot of money. Could you imagine the type of laboratory setting that I could put together with $50 million and the type of brilliant minds that I could attract to the table in order to build all these designs that I keep talking about in order to prove the technology to get it worldwide? $50 million? Think about that. And so, where's that money gone? If they're doing it every year, where's it gone?
Ask Gore.
We're still hearing. We're still hearing. We ain't solved it. There's 12 years left, according to some people. 10 years, according to another. We got 10 years of survival. Where's that money gone? Where's the solutions? That's
well, I guess climate must want more money out of us because if we've given all of this money and climate still hasn't changed for the better.
Well, no, I don't think Mother Nature's into having a gold tooth with a diamond in it and all this bling around her neck. I don't think Mother Nature needs their money.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like we have global warming and it's you people's fault, so we're going to continue producing oil. We're going to continue creating the systems that are destroying the earth, but you just give us more money. And if you give us enough money, climate will change.
Yeah, give us the money and we'll research the solutions. That's what they're saying when they're the ones that's doing it. It's the petrol dollar, for Pete's sake. The petrol dollar. Think about that. Your money's backed by oil, not gold. So that ought to be a first red flag. Why would they want to get rid of their continuity of government? Why would they ever want to get rid of the petrol dollar? They don't. They just want you to feel bad. They want you to stay in line. They want you to believe their lies and indoctrination and propaganda so that they can maintain control and live high on the hog and have their weapons of war and all the craziness that goes along with it. That's why mad science is alive and well, Patty.
Yep. Yep. It's really sad. It's really, really sad, Shaziz, that we are in the state that we are, and the only thing that needs to happen to change it is for the people to stop relying on a government to do the right thing.
That's right.
And start relying on each other. You know, that's all we need.
All we need is for them to come together. It's that simple. Because our combined resources together, you know, if you and I wanted to take a road trip and we had a vehicle but we only had a couple bucks apiece, we'd have about, you know, $4, enough gas to get us there and back, both of us. You know?
Yep.
And if people thought about that mindset and they combined their resources together, we could resolve these problems in short order. The government spend $50 million at the very least. It might be a lot more than that. I don't know. But they give it to a UN climate change fund. Now, why wouldn't they want to give that kind of money to an organization such as We the People who could actually take that money and get something real done? Because there ain't no problem. Really, there isn't. There isn't no man-made climate change with the exception of those who choose to tamper with the weather. They had a document called Owning the Weather by 2025. Why would they do that if that wasn't their intent?
Yeah, and the patents are out there. I mean, you can go and look at the string of patents that General Electric, a lot of the energy companies have, as well as the Defense Department, that these patents go on and on and on and on.
Yep.
About these inventions to control the weather, weather warfare, all of these things. I mean, the patents will blow your mind. And all you got to do is do a search for patent, free energy patent, or weather manipulation patent, weather, what do they call it? I can't think of it right now. But if you do the searches, just
weather modification.
Put them in there. Well, it's yeah. I read one the other day. It had to do with weather systems and environmental impacts patents with that are supposed to help the environment. They'll go into the desert and they'll make it green or whatever, or you know, I forget.
Terraform?
I forget.
Well, I get what you get at, but look, these folks out there, they obviously know simple science. They obviously know basic engineering and physics and all that kind of stuff because they're flying around in stealth bombers with the capability of doing some miraculous things. So they know what we know. They're just not willing to give it to you.
And we can't create an electric car that won't use petrol.
Yeah. There we go. And that's why the electric car industry has had such a hard time throughout the entirety of it.
And these people think electric cars are so great. Do you know that the batteries, what these batteries require in these electric cars? Lithium.
Yep.
Do you know where that comes from? The earth. Do you know how they get it out? They destroy the earth to get it out.
Yep. So with that said, there are other materials that are energy storage devices that you don't have to do all the damage that you've done. Heck, we've got enough resources available just in trash alone to resolve that problem. Well, folks, it's time to get up out of here and get ready for the Music with Kara Hour. Do you like that show?
Woohoo!
Yay!
Yeah, Kara is awesome. She's an excellent DJ. Did you know that?
Yeah, I love listening to her talking and the music she plays and stuff. She does pick a few ones that are kind of strange, but...
Yeah, but, you know, that's a DJ choice.
Yeah, that's it. That's the way it works out. Anyway, folks, listen. Stay tuned for the Music with Kara Hour, and then after that will be the Hope Show with Beverly. But if you heard this show today, and you believe in anything I'm talking about, if you believe this information to be worthy, please share it, repodcast it, broadcast, share the links. I want people to hear what was said on this show today. I want them to hear what's said on all these shows. And that's the only way we're going to get this information, the knowledge that is the power that could quite literally change the world that we live in and remove the chains of bondage that is the system, that is the same beast that's eating us all alive. We can fix this thing if we choose to do so. Patty, thank you very much for showing up here. You always brighten up my day.
I'm always blessed when I wake up and I can make it here in time.
Well, hopefully you make it up there in the morning. We could do a Knights of the Round Table together. What do you think?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Right,
I even put a note out every night on Saturday night so that who's ever up in the morning knows they better wake me up.
Great. All right, everybody. Peace and love. You've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Please listen to this and re-listen to it. And like I said, don't just listen. Think outside the box. Think of the potential of what you're hearing because you've just been told something really profound that could really change our world if we choose to take that knowledge and run with it. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends.
You got a laptop.
Ooh, you got a laptop. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
You got a laptop.
There it is.
You got a laptop.
God's
name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.